Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Holly Harris, who is the executive director of the U.S. Justice Action Network. Their website is justiceactionnetwork.org. Holly, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, now we're going to talk about reforms of our criminal justice system, and I understand your organization has efforts right now in 30 different states, and the good news to me is that Senator Mike Lee is behind this. I like Mike Lee. I think he is absolutely one of the best leaders in the whole, both the Senate and in the House of Representatives. He's just one of the best. So
one of the greatest,
yeah.
And one of the brightest young minds in the U.S. Senate. We were actually with him on the Hill this week, pushing for more support for the Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act, the great piece of legislation that reforms some of these, you know, ridiculous mandatory minimum sentences for your lower-level nonviolent offenders. And we actually pulled another sponsor onto the legislation through our efforts, Illinois Senator Mark Kirk. So we're big fans of Senator Lee.
All right. I prefer Lee, by the way, way over Kirk. But all right, all politics aside.
It just shows.
There's bipartisan support.
Voices, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so even though they're both of the same party, you get my drift. Okay, so
exactly.
Tell me the big picture here. What's the big picture here? Why does your organization even exist, and what are you trying to do in the big picture?
So the U.S. Justice Action Network is the largest bipartisan coalition working at both the state and federal level to reform our criminal justice system. Our organization is a little bit unique. We have a lot of strange political bedfellows working together, like the ACLU is working with Americans for Tax Reform. The NAACP is working with FreedomWorks. And the point of our organization is to say, look, we want to look beyond politics here and work together, you know, to reform a system that is just completely broken. Our federal prison population has exploded more than 800% over the last few decades. And, you know, there's been a similar problem in the states. But thanks to these, tough on crime policies that we now know weren't working. I mean, we've exploded our prison population and we're not getting the public safety return that we deserve. So our organization works to safely reduce the prison population through policies like sentencing reform, like pretrial detention reform, like alternatives to incarceration for your low-level nonviolent, particularly your first-time offenders. We work to reform penal codes to get a lot of these unfair, unnecessary, and duplicative laws off the books completely. And of course, we support reentry policies that break down barriers for your formerly incarcerated so they can find jobs, support their families, and lead crime-free lives. And what we now know, thanks to a lot of big red southern states, that these policies work. Over the last decade, the 10 states that have most significantly reduced their prison population saw roughly a 13% drop in their crime rates. The 10 states that most significantly increased their prison populations only saw an 8% drop in their crime rate. So we now know that not only do these reforms make our system fairer and they save money, but they're also making us safer, and that's what this should be about.
Huh. Okay, give us an example on the positive side. You said one of these red states, so that would mean Republican. They had a Republican majority or whatever. They had a reform. And yet the crime dropped,
sure.
The crime dropped, not but and. So give us an example, a specific example, what you're talking about.
The state that we hold out as the gold standard is Texas, which is really weird, right? You know, we always think of Texas as being sort of the tough on crime state. But in 2007, Texas was faced with spending $2 billion on 15,000 more prison beds because their prison population was exploding, or implementing reform policies that would safely reduce their prison population. Well, they did the latter, and not only did Texas save, on the conservative side, $2 billion, but Texas now has its lowest crime rate since 1968. And some of your greatest proponents of reform, like former Governor Rick Perry, Texas Senator Cornyn, come from Texas. Texas, Georgia, South Carolina, Ohio, all of these states that have conservative leadership have really made great strides on reform. I guess it's not surprising that the The federal side is lagging behind a bit. As we all know, Congress works at a glacial pace. But because roughly 30 states have now implemented some sort of smart on crime criminal justice reform, I do think we're going to see progress at the federal level this year.
Hmm. Okay, so explain to me how the crime goes down when the number of people being incarcerated goes down at the same time.
I know. It's very interesting. So when you incarcerate a person, and don't get me wrong, some people deserve to be isolated from society, you know, especially your violent offenders. You know, sentencing reform is about ensuring that the right people are behind bars for the right amount of time. But when you put somebody behind bars, you permanently economically disable that person. Individuals who've been incarcerated work roughly 9 fewer weeks per year and take home 40% less annual pay than their colleagues. Of course, when they get out of prison, they very often have a hard time finding a job, finding housing, improving their education. So, of course, they return to crime, return to prison, and that's what leads to skyrocketing crime rates, skyrocketing recidivism rates, mm-hmm. rather. I'm sorry. It's soon to be the weekend. And that's the cycle of failure that we're looking to break. And so our hope is for a lot of these individuals who've made their first mistake, or who have an opportunity to seek treatment, rehabilitation, you know, that we explore those options before we put somebody behind bars. And then once an individual is behind bars, you know, we've got to look at what are we doing to ensure that these people are spending that time becoming better citizens, not better criminals. Job training is incredibly important. Ohio is doing some great work here. The corrections secretary there, Secretary Gary Moore, has a program where inmates can get their CDL. So when they get out, they actually have jobs waiting for them. Good jobs, good paying jobs.
What's a CDL? What's a CDL?
It's a license where you can drive those big trucks.
Oh, okay.
It's a situation where a lot of these, you know, companies are looking for, you know, skilled labor, and truck drivers, apparently there's a real shortage of them. And so these individuals who get their CDLs have jobs waiting for them when they get out of prison. And we now know that a job is the single most impactful thing that stands between, you know, a formerly incarcerated person and returning to a life of crime.
Hmm. Now, I have had the privilege of interviewing the late, great Chuck Colson a few times. I'm sure you know who that is, right?
Of course.
Yeah,
of course.
And I wonder where, Christian conversion fits in here, too, because I know that a lot of his reforms saw really tremendous drops in the recidivism rate when, you know, there was a mentor involved, and in fact some of the work that they've done at Prison Fellowship has really been remarkable. I wonder if, you know, not with the government endorsing it, but I wonder if there's any way in which that's a part of this whole picture of you know, overhauling the reform, you know, trying to reform the penal code.
And his legacy has been amazing. The Colson Task Force has done a lot of incredible work. You know, it's interesting when you say the name Chuck Colson, brings back a lot of memories for me. I'm from a very strong Southern Baptist family. Faith is very important to us. Both of my parents have sat on the Board of Trustees at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. And when I was little, we used to go to retreats where we actually had a comic book, Chuck Colson comic books. You'll have to Google that. People don't believe me when I say, I have Chuck Colson comic books. But it was amazing. You know, he really did a tremendous job, of talking to people of faith and saying, you know, look, this is about redemption. And now some of the greatest proponents of criminal justice reform, you know, are some of your most well-respected voices in the faith-based community, like Al Mohler, the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, who actually joined with us in an op-ed in Politico, you know, pushing for stronger criminal justice reforms, particularly on the reentry side. Of course, the Pope has been a vocal, you know, proponent of criminal justice reform. You know, Russell Moore, also Southern Baptist community, is a strong proponent of reform. So, thanks to the faith-based voices across this country, including one of our partner organizations, the Faith and Freedom Coalition, you know, a lot of these reforms are being pushed by strong conservatives in big red southern states.
Now, what do you mean by reform on the reentry side? What does that mean exactly?
So when we talk about reentry programming, we talk about policies that break down barriers for the formerly incarcerated so they can find jobs, find housing, support their families and lead crime-free lives. I mean, these policies include expungement, which allows for a clean slate for certain low-level offenders after they've earned it, which means that they've spent a certain period of time crime-free. There was a really great expungement bill that just passed in Kentucky with overwhelming bipartisan support that actually allows for, felony expungement for certain low-level nonviolent crimes after a 5-year crime-free waiting period. And the hope is that not only will it enable a lot of these individuals to find better jobs and improve their education, but also that it broadens the pool of skilled labor for a lot of these manufacturing and industrial jobs out there where, a lot of these associations will tell you they just can't find skilled labor.
All right, let me ask you a question. I remember, if I recall this correctly, Chuck Colson himself had said something like at the time he was in prison in the early 1970s for Watergate-related crimes, there were about 200,000 incarcerated Americans, and he said through the years now, and this is before he died, and he died in 2012, that the population of Americans in prison...
Yeah, it was up to
2 million. So it was a tenfold increase.
2.3 million today, yes.
2.3
really
million.
Incredible.
That is incredible.
Million. And on the federal side, the prison population over the last couple of decades, thanks in part to the 94 crime bill, has exploded more than 800%. I mean, think about that. 800%. And are we really seeing the public safety return that we deserve? The drug scourge continues in this country. I think what we're seeing now is that we've gone too far. 1 in 3 American adults now has a criminal record. We're no longer talking about an obscure minority in this country. Every single American family is now somehow impacted by our criminal justice system. It's time to make some changes.
When you say 1 out of 3 has a criminal record, define that, please. Define criminal record.
Well, so 1 in 3 American adults has somehow been convicted of a criminal offense, whether it's a misdemeanor or a felony. They have a criminal record. And of course, we know that, what
would that include speeding?
Apply for a job.
Would that include speeding?
No. Those are violations. Those are violations. So we're talking about misdemeanors and felonies here. And we know what that can mean when these individuals go and apply for jobs. And so our hope is that if these individuals have been crime-free for a certain period, if they have been able to avail themselves of certain treatment or rehabilitation programs, that they will have the opportunity for a clean slate so they can move forward with their lives and be productive citizens. I mean, isn't that what we expect from these individuals? We shouldn't just throw in the towel on these folks. So many of them have, had an awakening in their lives, and they seek redemption. And I think that, we've got to be able to support these individuals and remove barriers to them being able to support themselves and their families and lead crime-free lives.
Okay, now when you say that there's 2.3 million in prisons right now, or prisons, jails, et cetera, I'm sure there are others who may yet be sentenced. So there may be, how many... our former prisoners or whatever. I mean, in other words, not the 1 out of 3 number. That just sounds unbelievable. That just
it is shocking. And, it's interesting.
What percentage of Americans, have been to jail or that are alive today?
I don't know the percentage there. All I can tell you is it's dramatically higher than it was several decades ago.
Yeah, okay.
And the real question, what's most important to our organization, which includes very conservative organizations like Americans for Tax Reform, FreedomWorks, the Faith and Freedom Coalition, Right on Crime, what's most important to those groups is that we're improving public safety. We're making the streets safer, not just for our families, but also for law enforcement. And when you're lowering crime rates and lowering recidivism rates, obviously, you're making society safer, and that really should be the most important thing that we're doing here.
I totally agree. Okay, people can get more information at justiceactionnetwork.org. Again, we've been talking
with
Holly Harris, Executive Director of the U.S. Justice Action Network. Thank you, Holly. Appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
All right, bye-bye now. All the best. For Vocal Point, I'm Jerry Newcomb.